I think we're going to start this morning with Senate File 637, Senator Herr, St. Paul Bonding Authority. Senator Herr, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to bring before you Senate File 637. This bill is from the City of St. Paul, and it's a very simple and straightforward bill. It was included in last year's veto tax bill and was also included in an early version of this year's federal conformity bill. The City of St. Paul has a capital improvement budget program known as CIB program. It allows the city to bond for public-owned infrastructure projects like police and fire station and park buildings and so forth. The city CIB program is overseen by public board with 18 community members who review and rank all proposal. They recommend a biennial budget to fund capital improvements. The ultimate funding decision are made by the city council and the mayor. And the city has this authority since 1971, and it sunsets every 10 years. Currently, it is set to expire this year, 2013, and we are requesting the extension of this authority for an additional 10 years. I would like to thank the committee for your time, and with me here today is Sarah Erickson, the City of St. Paul Government Relations Lobbyist, and also John North, our City of St. Paul Treasurer. So if you have any question, we are open to them.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Herr. Any questions, members? Ms. Erickson or the other? I didn't catch the treasurer's name.
Mr. John North.
Either one of you have anything to add?
No, Mr. Chair. We're just here for questions.
Okay. Questions, members? Looks like you did a good job of explaining it, Senator.
thank you.
We will lay I did have one just to verify. You normally have had a 10-year time period?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Right.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Erickson. Okay, we will lay Senate File 637 over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Dietzick, Senate File 13.
Good morning.
Morning, Senator. Welcome to your committee.
Yep, thank you. Today I'm here to discuss Senate File 13, which is a bill to reinstate the Environmental Response Fund in Hennepin County and Ramsey County. With me, I have Ramsey County Commissioner Janice Rettman and Scott Tankenoff with Hillcrest Development. Also with us to answer any questions are Rosemary Lavin, who is with Hennepin County Environmental Services, and Denise Bigbitter, who's with Ramsey County Housing and Redevelopment Authority. You should have gotten letters of support with your packet from a bunch of different communities in Hennepin and Ramsey, along with a fact sheet from both of the counties. In 1997, the legislature granted Hennepin County and Ramsey County the authority to impose a mortgage registration and deed tax on most property transactions to create the Environment Response Fund to clean up contaminated sites. The fund has provided over 300 grants totaling more than $47 million, leveraging over $2 billion in private development funds. It has created or retained almost 10,000 jobs. Many of these sites that were cleaned up were vacant brownfields or dilapidated older buildings. The cleanup improved and revitalized many neighborhoods and has added value to the tax base. This program helps grow the tax base in all of Hennepin County and Ramsey County. It benefits all property owners. The authority to collect the fee expired January 1, 2013. We are here today to ask to reinstate the authority to collect this fee and continue the Environment Response Fund. I have some amendments, which I believe we can pass out. They clarify the effective date and add a sunset date. I'll ask the testifiers to make some comments, and then I believe we have the realtors here to testify against the bill, and then we can take questions.
Thank you, Senator. And maybe while the amendments are being passed out, we'll continue on with the testimony.
Yep. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I'm please. Janice Rettman, Ramsey County Commissioner, serving District 3. This morning, I would like to give you a report card of sorts on the Ramsey County Environmental Response Fund. Indeed, the legislature created this fund for both Hennepin and Ramsey County in 1997. However, Ramsey County only implemented the fund in 2003, when we clearly had a plan to achieve maximum results. Being Minnesota's smallest and most fully developed county, we identified at least 2,000 acres of polluted lands. We then focused on number 4 of the legislation, quote, paying costs associated with remediating land or properties which are polluted or contaminated with hazardous substances. Every property has met this criteria. The bill also stated matching funds shall be sought from thanks. Deed, etc. Again, Ramsey County required, and I do mean required, the developer of every property to secure the matching cleanup funds prior to us being last in with the ERF dollars, the environmental response dollars. Third, the legislation, the property at the Max and Steel Dale Street shops would be the first priority, and all sites would lead to living wage jobs and economic development. Again, great success on all sites. For example, the Max and Steel Dale Street shops is 100% developed, occupied by 9 businesses, nearly with 103 newly created jobs as of the end of 2011, and 615 retained existing Ramsey County jobs. All jobs pay a minimum of $14 an hour and up to well over $31 an hour. All have benefits. In aggregate, in Ramsey County sites, if you look on page 6 and 7 of your brochures, it will show the ERF dollars per site and the leveraged cleanup dollars. That's in addition to the development cost. The bottom line of the $7 million leveraged in ERF dollars, almost $30 million was leveraged for cleanup. On all counts, Mr. Chair and Senators, we've achieved the goals you set out. And perhaps we received bonus points, at least I believe we did, because we've been highly praised in the neighborhoods with no complaints whatsoever. Plus, Ramsey County did not buy one property or take one property off the tax rolls to achieve these goals. In fact, we required the developer of the properties to have a funded development plan in hand that could be achieved within a window of 1 to 2 years following cleanup. Plus, our administration cost has been less than 2%. The value added by recognizing every Ramsey County ERF dollars generated $68 in increased market value, so a 1-to-68 ratio. This legislation is a winner, but we've only just begun to address the 2,000 acres. I believe Ramsey County has produced for you, and most importantly, the neighborhood, an Olympic type of gold medal winner and a grade A+. We hope you agree and will give us a green light on removing the sunset. I guarantee you we'll do you proud.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Tankenoff. I'm the managing partner of Hillcrest Development. We are a 65-year-old third-generation company. I think you have a lot of information before you. Keeping it simple, pictures tell 1,000 words. If you take a look in your packet at the pictures that are before you, you'll see two projects that my company, Hillcrest Development, worked on, one of which is Crown Center, the second which is Crown Center Phase 2, that were recently redeveloped by Hillcrest. Both of these are really good examples of successful projects that were made possible by grant programs like Hennepin County's ERF program. It's about jobs, It's about good living wage jobs, real estate taxes, removal of blight, and most importantly, removal of environmental remediation. There's 10 times more jobs in those two buildings than when we purchased those buildings. Those buildings were both empty, dilapidated, some very poor illegal uses going on in them, and it was in a neighborhood that nobody wanted to invest in. There's 340 living wage jobs there now, which is remarkable. The real estate taxes have more than doubled in the 2 years since our redevelopment. The blight, you can take a look at the pictures. It looks like a bomb went off in these buildings. And it's not just what went on in the buildings. It's what went on years ago underneath these buildings from a pollution standpoint. Businesses, people, investment are drawn to these properties. They're drawn into the neighborhoods. These neighborhoods are now experiencing a tremendous investment of redevelopment of commercial and housing since our initial investment, and it's being done without any assistance now. And I think that's the point. This is a program that leads to good investment. It is a necessary program. There were significant issues that were there. They had serious indoor issues, outdoor issues, and now they're fully compliant with environmental laws and the requirements. And beyond that, they're desirable. And I think that that's the point. We want these projects to actually be desirable. I'm reminded at home mostly by my kids that there's not much I'm really good at. I don't know if anyone else hears that, but I'm told I'm not really good at much. This is one thing in the world that I know. I know about environmental remediation. I know about adaptive reuse. And adaptive reuse is not possible without this kind of a program. This is a niched program. It's different than the council program. It's different than the deed program. And it makes a tremendous, tremendous difference in what people are able to do. It has tremendous return, not just in tax base, but in jobs and removal of blight. And in the challenging economic times that we have, it's truly necessary. We're buyers of property. We're sellers of property. We pay into the IRF fund. And we do not use the IRF fund. It is the minority of what we utilize when we go to purchase property. However, it's critical. And without it, I can assure you there will be less tax base, more blight, more environmental issues. This is a complete no-brainer. I know that there are folks here that probably will get up and speak about the housing economy, how it's important that we protect the housing purchases. I've got to tell you, from the standpoint of blight, from the standpoint of issues that exist in Hennepin County, which is the county that I know, this program keeps properties from going tax forfeiture. It is not a question. In my opinion, it is an absolute fact. I'm happy to answer any questions, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Let the record show a quorum is present.
Mr. Chair, I also have Nancy Landmark, who is with the Minnesota Land Title Association, to testify in favor of the bill.
Ms. Landvier?
Landmark, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, and thank you, Senator Dziedzic, for the opportunity today. I'd like to speak first and foremost in favor of the principles behind the bill that is proposed and under consideration today. On a personal note, my business model is that I work on commercial transactions in and around the country, but a great many of them in Hennepin and Ramsey County. And I have seen the difference these funds can make on those projects, including projects like the Schmidt Brewery redevelopment and the Longfellow Station redevelopment projects in Minneapolis. So I've seen the effect of these literally putting a project over the top from not working to working. Secondly, I would like to address some comments on the bill, particularly from the perspective of the members of our association. We work as the title insurers and closing agents of the transactions where the deed tax and mortgage registry tax are collected. While we support the fundamental principles of the bill, we have had some concerns about the practical implementation of the bill, and those concerns come largely out of our experience in 2008, the last time the sunset kicked in and the deed tax dropped for a little bit, and then when the bill was repassed with language having it effective immediately upon enactment, we ran into a problem because Hennepin County and Ramsey County interpreted the transactions a little differently, and we found that we needed more time to educate our members to make sure they were collecting the correct amount of state deed tax and mortgage registry tax at the time of closing. particularly for clients or customers who are closing on a real estate transaction at the end of 1 month. It takes a few days for us to get documents recorded. And so we've asked for clarity, and I've had a chance to review the proposed amendments, Senator Dietzek, and they do address our concerns, those being that it be clear that the effective date of when these additional MRT and state deed tax will be collected is at a date certain in the future so that we can, in fact, educate people on what to collect. And secondarily, that it be clarified as to whether or not it is for deeds and mortgages executed on or after that effective date or recorded on or after that effective date, again, to seek clarity for our consumers and our business people who are doing closings. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Senator Dietzek, the issue of the amendments has come up. I think we should deal with them now.
Okay.
So would you like to move the A1 amendment? And Senator Dietzek, this is the first stop for these bills, so.
Yes, we have the A1 amendment that clarifies the enactment date, and then the A2 amendment, which adds the sunset date of 2023, so 10 years.
Senator Dietzek moves the A1 amendment. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Senator Dietzek moves the A2 amendment. Any questions, members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendments adopted. Senator Dietzek, now that we've adopted the A2 amendment, I am going to ask a question with regard to the date change that is made there. Has this traditionally been a 5-year or a 10-year time period before the sunset has been enacted in effect? Ms. Redmond?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, may I?
Mm-hmm.
5 years.
5 years.
But we'd love 10.
Yeah. Senator Dietzek, we might want to consider whether we're going to extend that to 2018 as opposed to 2023, but we can do that at a later date.
Okay. I can give you some of the rationale for the 10 years was that the program has been going on. When it originally was put in, it was given 5 years to see if it was working. We've done it a few times, and so the thought was to do it 10 years because we've got it going and then come back and reevaluate it. But 5 years would work, too.
Well, I'm happy that there is a sunset in there. We can have further discussion about the date. Any other questions, members, for these testifiers? There are some other folks on the list, so thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. Levine? Is she here? No? Mr. Egger?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Paul Egger with the Minnesota Association of Realtors, and thanks for the opportunity to testify today. And I also want to thank Senator Dietzek for taking the time to meet with us during the session and keep us updated as she looked at some of the questions that we were raising about the potential funding sources outside of the one that's in the bill. I'll be very brief. Mr. Chair, we do oppose the bill. And I would just ask you to look at the language. The language is about the funding mechanism. And the counties have done a great job of explaining to you the benefits of the fund. But the fund is where the dollars are deposited. The funding mechanism is the mortgage registry and deed taxes that will be collected specifically in these two counties on top of the state mortgage registry and deed taxes. And I guess I would sum up our concerns like this. You heard a lot about the broad benefits to the residents and the businesses and the counties of the activities going on, but the tax base is narrow on paying for those activities. And the concern that we've just like to put in front of the committee is if the benefits are broad-based, the funding source should be broad-based. And Mr. Chair, just lastly, to your question on the sunset date, we appreciate that there is a sunset date. Historically, it has been 5 years. I think that's an appropriate time frame for the legislature to come back, take a look, have the discussion. Maybe there are other funding sources out there that we haven't identified yet that would be better than the one in front of us at this time. And so with that, I'd take any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Thank you, Mr. Eggers. Anything else? Remember, anybody else wish to testify on Senate File 13? Anything else, Senator Dietzick?
No, I'd just like to thank everybody for showing up. I will point out that, and I believe it is in the packet, Ramsey County, the average, it's a 1/100th of 1% is the tax, and it averages to about $33 on a property in Ramsey County. So we're not talking a lot of individual dollars, but I believe, and I believe the testimony shows that the project works, and when you're buying the house, you're paying for it, but you're also buying in and you're improving the you want your property values to increase, and this program helps maintain the property values in Hennepin and Ramsey County. So thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Senate File number 13 is laid over for possible inclusion. We are going to move around a little bit today. We're going to do Senate File 75. I think it's real quick, and while we have our members here, I'd like to bring up Senate File 75. That is my bill. I'm just going to do an amendment to it, members. Should I pass the gavel over to Senator Marty for this? Then I think I'll just stay here. For those of you that, Senator Marty, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Senator Scoia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. For those of you that were in division, we heard this bill in division. There was a drafting error in that it was encompassing much more than we had originally intended. Senate File number 35 is an effort to repeal. Senate File number 75 is an effort to repeal obsolete language that deals with June accelerated sales and use tax remittance, and we're repealing obsolete language. The amendment strikes all of the fiscal impact that was reported on the fiscal note that we had in division.
Senator Scoia moves the A2 amendment. Discussion on the amendment. If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, Senate File 75 members, it should be non-controversial. It's just repealing obsolete language, and I would like to move this to the floor if I could, please.
Senator Scoia moves that Senate File 75 as amended be recommended to pass. Is there any discussion on that? Anyone who wanted to speak to it? Not all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Wieger? Senator Wieger. Welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator Wieger. I expect we might see you here off and on again this session.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 161 is an initiative from the Minnesota Municipal Power Agency. That agency was founded in 1992 and includes, at this time, 11 communities around the state, and that includes North St. Paul, which is my district. Senator Pratt, who is going to try to join me, also has a community in the district that would directly benefit. And we're talking about providing power, electric power, to over 60,000 customers in a very cost-effective way. This bill provides wholesale electricity for an exemption for equipment and the purchase, and this window of opportunity for the generation equipment purchase would be June 30, 2013 to June 1st, 2017. And the communities are asking for this additional tool to provide effective delivery of electricity in their communities. Without the tax exemption, no construction of the facilities would likely take place. So That would be a brief background on why we're here with Senate File 161. I believe there's an agency report if you'd like to see that. There's a fiscal note that indicates there's not a state impact. There could be a very small local impact, and that wasn't clear. So with that background, I'd like to introduce my testifiers and ask them which order you'd.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. And who would you like to start with? Ms. Dolan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kelsey Dolan, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Municipal Power Agency. I just wanted to outline a little bit more about what this program would be and what the benefits of the program are to MMPA's members. As Senator Wieger indicated, MMPA is comprised of 11 member communities. We are a smaller power agency, and this program would really help MMPA to remain competitive and maintain competitive rates to our members. The reason this program makes a lot of sense for the agency is that it has some significant efficiencies, and that this generation would be located behind the meter and would interconnect directly with our member communities like North St. Paul, like Shakopee. There are some transmission losses that you incur going out onto the transmission grid. With this program, those are reduced. And there are also some sizable costs associated with both installing the transmission infrastructure as well as using that transmission system. And so those costs would also be reduced for the agency. In addition to that, there are some reliability benefits to having this generation located behind the meter. And those are sort of the three primary components for pursuing this program, which would have smaller natural gas-fired reciprocating engines located at the load within these member communities. And with that, I'll pass it on here, if I may, to John Crooks.
Thank you, Ms. Dolan. And Senator Wieger, I've been informed that there's an author's amendment. So while we're hearing the testimony from Mr. Crooks, perhaps we'll pass that out, and then we'll act on that after the testimony. So if we could pass the amendment out, and welcome to the Tax Committee, Mr. Crooks.
I'm John Crooks. I'm Utilities Manager for Shakopee Public Utilities. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for letting us testify in favor of Senate File 161. Shakopee Public Utilities is one of the 11 member communities of MMPA, as Ms. Dolan has informed you. We're a municipal power provider. We're different from the investor-owned, such as Xcel, that we're locally owned and locally governed. The three main portions that we have to deliver electricity to our customers is the generation, which we're looking to have provided by MMPA with this project. And then if it wasn't located there, we have to bring through high voltage transmission lines. We have to bring that electricity to Shakopee before our utility can distribute that. What this project does is eliminate that transmission part. We're looking to generate the power locally, directly into a substation, and then directly into our distribution system. By that, we're able to avoid costs of building high transmission lines, high voltage transmission lines, or paying the fees associated with the Midwest Independent System Operators, or MISO, which controls the high voltage transmission lines in this area. The plants would be, depending on the size of the city that we're looking at, between 5 megawatts and 25 megawatts. To put that in perspective, the city of Shakopee, the load that we have typically on the hottest of the summer days is 100 megawatts. We're looking to possibly construct a facility in the order of 25 megawatts, which would be 25% of our load during system peak. That increases the reliability that we have for our customers and our businesses and our industries. As Ms. Dolan said, it's a more efficient way to deliver the electricity. We don't have rely on the high voltage transmission lines. We don't have to incur the line losses that typically takes place in bringing electricity or power from outside from the grid into Shakopee. We believe this is an opportunity for us to be competitive and to keep our rates low for our customers. We can soften rate increases over time by eliminating the expected increased costs that we have with transmission fees with MISO. We also believe that this is a very good economic development tool for the city of Shakopee as we have locally generated power and reliability and lower costs. With that, I thank you for allowing me to testify.
Mr. Crooks, are there other examples of this type of generation where it's kind of after the substation? Or Ms. Dolan?
Mr. Chair, if I might respond. There are a number of other facilities in the state of Minnesota with generation located at the substations or at load, but it has been over time reduced in the state as we're aware of. There's in general been a push over the past 20, 25 years to these larger generating facilities, and now with the increasing need for the transmission infrastructure to grow, to deliver that power to load, there's sort of been a little bit of a shift, if you will, to move more towards those smaller generating facilities at load again as there were, you know, in the 50s and 60s.
And Ms. Dolan, do we lose a little flexibility because you're not putting it out into the grid, or is it that not an issue that you would see of concern? Seems to me that if the load is, you know, kind of a larger area, perhaps having it, you know, able to go into the grid would be a good thing. I haven't thought that through very much, but it seems to me we might be losing some flexibility.
Mr. Chair, in general, the closer that you can get that generation to where it's being used, the more higher functioning those models are for the overall system. So if you're able to really site it right next to where you need it, you know a little bit better how the system will react. And so having this generation behind the meter doesn't actually have any negative impact. If anything, it has a positive impact on the overall system's functionality. You know, you've got those lots of wind farms, for instance, that are located a far, you know, long ways from the loads, and that's been a challenge for the system overall because it's you don't exactly know how that will interact with the rest of the grid.
And Ms. Dolan, because you're not using the high voltage transmission line system, are they still generating high voltage electricity and running it through the substation, or is it being generated at a different, more consumer level?
Mr. Chair, it won't have to go through the sort of step-up transformers in order to get out onto the high voltage transmission system. Most of our members operate at about 1247 kV, their distribution system. So it's sort of a medium voltage system on their distribution level.
Okay, thank you. Senator Wieger, you have the misplaced my amendment. A1 amendment. This is an author's amendment, so I don't know if you wanted to address what it is before or after we adopt it, but maybe if somebody could just tell us you're designed to connect directly to the municipality substation. That's the exact purpose of the bill, right, or your substations?
Correct. Mr. Chair, this was simply a clarifying amendment through our work with the reviser.
Okay. Senator Marty moves the A1 amendment. Any questions, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted.
That completes our presentation.
Okay, thank you, Senator Wieger. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I really apologize that this has been asked. Just kind of a personal clarification. And maybe even this is for counsel. This is a municipal power agency. We're at a municipal electric utility serving its municipality. My understanding is that they would not have property taxes, but is that the difference here, the difference between a municipal electric utility owned by that municipality or in this case the agency, which is more of a cooperative venture with other municipalities? Is that the difference that we're talking about here that makes this come before us?
Ms. Dolan, the difference between personal property and real property?
Mr. Chair, in the state of Minnesota, there are this personal property tax on generation equipment and transportation equipment. And for the past 20 years or so, it's been quite common that all, either whether you're a utility or a power agency, that this exemption is
okay.
Presented. So it's not a difference between, I guess, a municipal agency.
I understand.
And
that's personal versus real. Okay.
Correct, yeah.
Thank you.
I think, I don't know if Mr. Silva wants to step in here, but Senator Senjum, I think the utilities are one of the few areas where they still pay personal property tax. Yeah.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Anything else, members? Anybody else want to testify on Senate File 161? Seeing none, thank you, Senator Wieger. We will lay Senate File 161 over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Senator Franzen, you able to make it in? Good morning. Welcome to the Tax Committee. And how was your drive in this morning?
Not too bad.
Yeah, good. Senate file minutes. Number 212, deadlines for special service districts repealing. Senator Franzen.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and thank you, committee members. This bill, first of all, I want to thank the committee members, especially Senator Ress and Senjum and Senator Nelson for co-authoring this bill. Senate File 212 pertains to a couple of tools that cities have used since 1996 to revitalize and invest in their housing in downtown areas. These tools are important to cities around the state, but particularly for the cities that I represent that are developed and have high quantities of older condo and townhome housing stock. For instance, Bloomington was actually one of the first cities to use a special service district tool in 1984. Minnetonka also recently created their first housing improvement area in 2012 to help with repairs to a boiler and roofs on one of the oldest condominiums in the city. They expect to receive more requests for housing improvement districts going forward as the housing stock continues to age. And the city of Edina, which I also represent, is interested in using this tool in the future. As some of you may know, since before 1996, individual cities would have to come to the legislature with individual bills for individual districts, so there would be a patchwork of statutes with one-time grants of authority. After 1996, the legislature decided to make the authority available statewide with a standardized process with checks and balances for establishing the districts and for making changes to the areas. The tool had an initial sunset provision of 2001 after being established back in 1996, and has been renewed every 4 years since. This legislation seeks to remove the current sunset date of June 30th, 2013. And we're requesting this given the track record of the program and successful use by cities around the state. We think it's time to give the authority to be made permanent so that more cities can invest and have this option as a tool in the future, even if they haven't used it to date. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Heather Cederholm with the League of Minnesota Cities to provide more details on the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Cederholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Heather Cederholm with the League of Minnesota Cities. As most of you know, it's a statewide association that represents over 830 cities in the state. And we've had the pleasure of working on the bill with Metro Cities, an association of the 84 cities in the 7-county metro area. Cities across the state have used housing improvement areas and special service districts to assist commercial landowners and homeowners to make improvements. Over 15 cities across the state have used special service districts to improve the economic vitality of their retail corridors, including downtown shopping districts. And at least 10 cities have used the housing improvement area authority to allow homeowners in condominiums and townhomes to protect their homes by repairing roofs or exteriors. And cities get involved in these tools when property owners are seeking to assess themselves for the improvements. And sometimes this is the only financing option available. We have some city officials here today from St. Louis Park to speak to you about their own city's experience with both of the tools and answer any questions you may have. And before I turn it over to Michelle Schnitker, Housing Supervisor from the City of St. Louis Park, and Sean Walther, Senior Planner from the city, I want to call your attention to a letter of support from the City of Rochester that's in your packets, and it describes their current use of the Special Service District tool. They were unable to come up today due to the weather. With that, I'll turn it over to our local experts on the use of the tools.
Thank you, Ms. Cederholm. Ms. Schnitker?
Yes, Ms. Schnitker. Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Michelle Schnitker. I'm the housing supervisor for the City of St. Louis Park. I'm here today in support of Senate File 212, which would repeal the sunset provision for housing improvement areas. The City of St. Louis Park has utilized housing improvement areas as an effective financing tool to assist with the preservation of the city's townhome and condominium units. Our housing improvement area financing allows housing of properties belonging to homeowners associations to borrow money from the city at reasonable terms to complete common area improvements. The City of St. Louis Park has 45 townhome and condominium associations totaling about 3,500 units. This comprises about 15% of our housing stock. This is an aging housing stock. Most of these units were built in the 70s and the 80s, and at 30 to 40 years old, many of these properties have rehab and deferred maintenance needs. Seeing a need to preserve this housing stock in our community, the first housing improvement area in St. Louis Park was established in 2002. Since that time, we've actually had six additional housing improvement areas that have been established at the request of the homeowner associations. A total of $12.6 million has been reinvested in 1,100 units citywide. The projects are diverse in size. They range from 20 units to 280 units. Housing improvement areas have addressed a number of challenges faced by homeowner associations. These challenges have included underfunded reserves, low association fees, and residents with modest incomes that need affordable payments for improvements. Many of the associations lacked professional management over the years and have a lack of board expertise. They often lack long-term planning. Often the bylaws restrict the amount that they can do for internal assessments, or they have an inability to pass assessments. Associations also have no collateral. All of the HIAs in St. Louis Park were rejected by at least two lenders due to low reserves, low estimated market values, and low operating budgets. And due to deteriorating condition of the property coupled with adverse market conditions, property owners have experienced declining property values, making it difficult for homeowners to sell their units. From the homeowner associations, housing improvement area financing offers a competitive loan rate, a fixed long-term loan, affordable payment options, including prepayment or annual payments, and a loan that is applied to individual owners. For the city, housing improvement area financing offers a low-risk means to maintain and preserve the city's townhome and condominium housing stock and to stabilize neighborhoods. Requirements in the development agreement with the townhome association or condominium association ensure that the association will remain well-managed, financially solvent, and maintain adequate reserves to meet future rehab and replacement needs. The City of St. Louis Park considers the ability of cities to establish housing improvement areas a vital and important financing tool that assists in preserving and improving an important, affordable housing resource in our community. The City of St. Louis Park supports making the housing improvement area statute permanent. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Schnitker. Mr. Walter?
Good morning. Just want to tell us about our experience here in St. Louis Park with special service districts. This is an important tool for the City of St. Louis Park in providing an enhanced level of service in a vibrant and welcoming commercial and corridors and districts in the city. We have six districts that have been established in the City of St. Louis Park. The oldest was established in 1996 and the most recent in 2009. And each of those districts was established with a 10-year time period, and two of those districts have been renewed. This is really a self-imposed assessment that businesses agree to. The city itself can introduce the concept and ideas, but we cannot begin a formal process until we have a level of support from the businesses that would be affected. And at the end of the process, if it has not gone well, it's a very low threshold to be able to veto the action that the city has taken to establish the district. We have had enormous success in the city. We've transformed the Excelsior Boulevard corridor, and we've also enhanced the Park Place Boulevard corridor in the City of St. Louis Park. I think I'll leave it at that. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions, members? Senator Franzen, I know that the advocates are advocating for a complete repeal of the sunset provision. Tax committee tends to like to have people come back and make sure that the project is working. I don't think we're going to do any amendment now, but I'd like to have a continued discussion with you about the timeline of the extension, whether it would be permanent. I think in the past said every 4 years there's been an extension. Maybe they could go a little longer or something, but I'd like to have a continued discussion with you before we finalize this in the bill. But we'll lay it over as it is for today. And, Senator Reinerts.
Mr. Chair, and I would just support your comments. You know, that's sort of been at the heart of that bigger discussion we've had around tax expenditures, just the idea that we revisit these things, not that they don't have merit, not that they don't accomplish what we want them to do, but that we're forced to just check in once in a while and verify that they're still doing that.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Franzen.
I would say we'd be open to having that longer time frame or expanded versus the 4 years. We certainly would prefer having it permanent, given there is checks and balances at the local level, and frankly, that's where they really belong. Gives local control, and also there's a hurdle that the local cities and entities have to go through. So it doesn't mean taking this sunset out that it's an automatic. So there is still a process that cities have to go through, and it's pretty strenuous to go through. So I think that there's always, I understand the concern, definitely would love to have a continued mm-hmm. conversation, but the preference is still to have it permanent.
We'll leave it as is for now, but we'll sit and visit. Anything else, members? Anybody else?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Sanjum.
And I would just like to support the author's comments there. These are locally controlled initiatives, in our case in Rochester, public hearings, the works, and so it's a pretty homegrown kind of idea that if it works in one community, fine. It seems like it ought to work, but it may not be for everybody. But it just seems to me that this kind of a decision is best made back home, and if it is, I don't think the state's hurt by it at all. In fact, it's improved by it.
Thank you, Senator Sanjum. Anybody else want to testify on Senate File 212? Seeing none, nothing else, members? Thank you, Senator Franzen. Senate File 212 is laid over for possible conclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members.
And members, I believe that concludes the work for today. We are going to meet Thursday in an abbreviated meeting. We will have to be done by 10 o'clock. We have three bills on the agenda currently, Senate File 177 and Senate File 576 that are my bills, a Senator Hoffman bill 569. All of these bills deal with education funding, levies, and equalization. So we'll have another little education day. We're hopefully going to move these bills to the K-12 budget division for their input on Thursday. Anything else? Thank you, members. Committee is adjourned.